Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome to back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhoof with Brian Myers. And this, my friends, is the last, not the show, but the last time we're actually recording in the Boone studio. We will be moving down to Des Moines in a couple weeks. Next week, Lord willing, if the radio station is actually up, there's going to be one day they're going to be down. It will probably just be we're going to be replay our anniversary show. So just FYI about that.
And Brian, you realize that with that pregnant pause that you had there, several people passed out at the mere thought that this might be our last show.
Yeah, not our last show. We're just coming.
They were passing out with happiness, probably, but they were passing out.
And I'm disappointing you now. We will be back.
You've really messed these
in
poor
a couple
folks
weeks.
Up.
So next week, it'll just be if the radio station is live on next Saturday, it will be a replay, just so FYI.
Yeah, but it's an awesome show.
It is an awesome show. Listen,
it's
our best of, or at least from the first year of our show. We've had some good stuff since.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of good stuff,
okay.
Man.
All right.
We are excellent. This is broadcast excellence that we do every week, Brian. We bring every week to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Last week, Betty, tell everybody about the Lincoln Dinner.
It was fun-ish. No, I'm just... as much fun as you can possibly have at a political fundraiser. Two things I learned. One, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham is a very funny man. And I don't mean funny looking. I mean, he's a funny man.
He's a little funny looking,
well,
too,
he is
by
kind
the way,
of funny but... looking. But we like you, Senator Graham. So please come on our show. Anyway.
Go grovel at his feet. He'll come.
He's just a character. And I kind of... when Jennifer Bowen was on a couple weeks ago, we were actually talking about him, and she had mentioned that too. She was in a meeting with him, and she didn't realize that as well. And I'd never experienced that till last Saturday. And man, he had me cracking up. He even told a Calvinist joke. He said, "Are any Presbyterians here?" And you know, several people raised their hand. "You're predestined to be here." I'm just like, yes, yes. It was awesome. So
that's impressive.
That was impressive. Yeah, I think you missed that. You were doing your little bathroom break during that time. So.
Did you need to tell everybody
yes,
that?
Absolutely.
No,
you,
okay.
Well, you are, you know, my elder, and therefore
stop. Just stop that now. Stop it now.
Anyway, what was your favorite part?
Oh, clearly, it was Donald Trump.
Oh yeah, because of all the substantive things he had to say.
I think there was some substance. I'm not sure. This is totally incomprehensible.
Me,
rambling.
Me. Can you believe it? Me.
We're going to surprise a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, we're going to make this announcement.
I can build stuff.
I think it's in June he's going to be making an announcement. I wonder what that might be.
Oh, please, Donald, stay in.
I know.
Stay in.
Ladies
and gentlemen, I looked over at Shane, and the guy was completely gone, laughing, tears coming down his cheeks. I mean, you had to be there.
The unfortunate thing was that he didn't mean to be funny, but he actually he actually had the entire, the press area around us. I wasn't the only one laughing.
Oh no, everybody on our end of the press line there was losing it too.
And Mike, I guess Mike. If I were to advise Donald Trump, I know you've got this persona, but this really, the narcissism really turns Iowans off. Do not refer to yourself in the third person, please.
No, don't tell him that.
Well, or do, but it's going to be harder to take you seriously.
Yeah, I think that ship's already sailed, buddy.
Probably.
No, I have to say, I don't think that I have enjoyed watching a political candidate this much since Ross Perot in 1992.
That's true. I mean, he is entertaining. And we both
this
hope,
is going to be fun.
This is not an endorsement. I want to be very clear about this, but we both hope Donald Trump does stay in the race because I would love to see him in the debates.
Oh, man.
That'd be fun. That kind of remind me. I can't think of his name. The guy in the Iowa U.S. Senate race who just was in there to hawk his book. And the one debate that they had, everybody, AFP, Americans for Prosperity, held at Drake University. His answer was like somewhere in there. He had to slide in, and you can read this in my book. Blah, 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 blah. I was waiting for him to give a website and a phone number, a toll free number they can call to order it. But it was just, so I don't, you know, Donald, obviously, he's getting in for, I don't want to judge his intentions. He loves his country.
I think, look, here's the thing about Trump. I think he is genuinely mad about how things are going.
Well, and who wouldn't be?
And he spits nails every time he talks about the Chinese. And about all of the factories that are being built in Mexico.
We know who the Chinese don't want as president.
Yeah. But having said that, again, I mean, the guy has to know that he has no realistic chance, and he's going to have to spend a boatload of his own money to do this.
Right.
Which tells me that there's an awful lot of ego here that's manifesting itself into this, into this campaign.
Possibly.
But whatever. Donald, stay in. We love you, buddy.
Yeah. We have a few clips that we'd like to play, provided we have, you know, we'll try to get as many of these in as possible. This first one I actually want to talk about a little bit more. This happened Wednesday during the debate on the appropriation standing bill that was passed in the Senate, SF-510. I know that's about as exciting as watching paint dry, talking about a standings appropriations bill.
This is the state legislation.
This is Iowa, in the Iowa House. The state representative Mary Masher was having an exchange with state representative Greg Hartzell over an amendment to this bill, SF-510. The standings bill. This amendment was offered to require parents to be given the opportunity to review material and give consent for conferences, off school grounds conferences and events dealing with human growth and development. This bill came out in the debate, was specifically targeting the governor's conference on LGBTQZSY. You know, anyway, those kids, the youth, as well as the Safe Schools conference, which I think that group is actually involved in this governor's conference. I can't say I know all that much about it, even though I do know some of the material involved has gone beyond just anti-bullying. It's some of it was actually quite graphic. So anyway, without further ado, I'll let you play the clip. It's about a minute and 15 seconds. I want to talk about a couple things you'll hear.
They already do, and having never taught, you don't even know the materials that are being sent home.
I beg your pardon. Are you saying I've never taught?
Well, I don't think you've taught human growth and development and sent home materials, have you?
Oh, I've taught human growth and development to my kids.
No, I'm talking about to children in a school setting. There's a little difference.
I teach in a school setting.
I'm talking about a public school setting.
You're saying that my school setting is not legitimate?
It's not a public school setting. No,
right.
It is not.
But I'm taking issue with your assertion that I haven't taught. I have taught.
I am saying to you, a public school setting is different than a home environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you would agree with that.
Sure.
So I think you have not had the experience of sending home permission slips for field trips, and you have not had the experience of sending home information about what is to be taught in a human growth and development class. Some of us in this chamber have, and so we know what is included in those letters and what must be required in those letters. Thank you, Representative Hartzell.
Hello, thank you. After okay, a couple things.
She sounded annoyed.
Yeah, I think she was. And this was one of several people lining up to take pot shots at Hartzell. But she was the one that was probably, she made an earlier point about homeschoolers because they were talking about
it was mentioned, oh, you know, public school students coming to the Capitol and end up lobbying. And it's like, oh, that's okay with homeschoolers? Well, one's done on the parents' dime. The other one's done on school district's dime. What do you think? A little bit different. That and one is one kid, you know, kid's representing his parents when he's involved in his education. The other one's spouting off public school talking points that he's been given or she's been given. So, yeah, there's a huge difference when families come compared to when a school district comes to do any type of lobbying. I honestly don't know how much that happens, but there was a glimmer of honesty here. State Representative Mary Masher obviously does not see homeschooling as legitimate.
That was pretty clear.
That was pretty clear.
Did you read between the lines?
Right, right. Well, she said it. I mean, she didn't
explicitly say.
She said, so you don't see this, my school as being legitimate. It's not a public school. No, it's not.
What? The context was his assertion, I've taught. You're saying I haven't taught.
Right.
So it was the teaching, it really was the subject.
Right.
I'm not arguing against your point. I think that's where she's coming from.
Right. And, you know, there is differences between classroom setting and school. Yes, I get it. She's making a huge assumption. And, you know, on one hand, I have to give her credit that most schools, by law, actually are required to, or at least by insurance, or somebody's requiring them, or school district policy, to do permission slips anytime you go do any type of field trip off campus. That's generally how it goes. You know, the only difference would probably be is if it was a weekend event and the youth transported themselves. However, with she's making an assumption that every single school does this well, and that's probably not true. So whether we need to have an amendment for this or not, I don't know. It's not necessarily a hill I would die on, provided there's something already in the code that requires, and the Democrats are saying it's already there. So fine, just enforce it.
Well, yeah, for me, that's the bottom line.
Right.
It seems to me that the parents have every right to observe the material.
Right.
As a matter of fact, they need to.
Right.
Not only do they have the right to, they need to.
And what blows me away is that, you know, there's this assumption, just because we're talking about the LGBTQ youth conference, that suddenly, you know, we don't need to, you know, oh, we don't want to talk about parents, you know, doing, I mean, I don't know, this the objection of this. If it's something that they already do, or schools already do, what's the beef? You know, on one hand, okay, maybe it is redundant, but still, what's the beef? If they already do this, why are you concerned? So anyway, moving on. By the way, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and man, this first segment's blown fast. We're going to have to maybe bring some of this into the next thing. But moving down to Morning Joe on MSNBC.
Are you skipping clip two? We got to come back to that but at some point.
Yeah, we'll try to.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll try to, maybe in the third segment.
Okay.
Iowa Democrats on Morning Joe, there was a focus group done. Anyway, we'll just play it.
this is Mark Halperin, if I remember correctly. He's got a room full of people.
What did she accomplish that you consider significant as Secretary of State?
Secretary of State? I really can't name anything off the top of my head.
Marlene,
yeah, wait, give me a minute. Give me 2 minutes to go someplace else.
Okay, Christina, can you think of something that she accomplished as Secretary of State that impressed you or thinks important?
Did you hear the crickets chirping in the background?
I was feeling awkward during that clip. Like, I could think of a few things. Not something that she probably wants to tout. How she royally screwed up Benghazi, for one. The Russians invaded Crimea and the weak response we had to that. Our weak, tepid response to Iran and the fact that we're negotiating with them now. I mean, John Kerry has some of the blame for that. But she got the ball rolling on that. Our strained relationship with Israel. Shall we go on? I mean, we could list a number of things. So either Democrats just don't know these things, they don't want to talk about these things. But
I mean, on a good day, it's been a completely vacuous performance.
Yes.
And as you say, on a bad day, it's a disaster. Now, to be fair, I think a lot of that's coming from the top.
Right.
Her boss, or ex-boss in this case.
Absolutely. I think we got some time to play next two clips, 5 and 6, Ron. Just playing back to back. Reporters are starting to ding Hillary on her lack of taking questions.
You're right. The biggest question is when Hillary Clinton will actually take questions from reporters, but also from regular Iowans. But we don't know if it'll happen today. It's been 28 days since she's taken a question. And the reason it matters is this. Some of her Democratic supporters are saying she needs to be more clear on her position. She needs to be more clear on where she stands. But most of the criticism is coming from her Republican rivals, of course.
Questions. Hillary Clinton is back on the campaign trail today. She's been doing a bunch of fundraisers, and today she's in Iowa, in Mason City, Iowa. Do you think she's finally got to start taking some questions from the press?
Well, of course, I think she ought to, but I don't think that we will see that from her. You know, what folks, allies of Hillary Clinton, folks in her camp say is, her doing a press conference is not like any other candidate doing a press conference. There's dozens and dozens of press there. It's a full-on thing, and that conflicts with the image they're trying to create for her, which is that this is all about voters and everyday Americans. She has to answer some questions. She's under a lot of pressure, particularly on trade and TPP. Yep. So this can't go on forever.
And she actually has to.
So they're saying, yeah, she needs to answer questions. We'll be right back, and coming up next, we'll have Alfonso Aguilar with American Principles in Action, talking about immigration. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Your friend just had a huge fight with her husband. She is frustrated and can only think about how bad the conflict is and will become. How can you help? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Our first reaction to a friend like this is to listen. This works initially, but in the long run, we tend to only be encouraging negative thinking and gossip. You're not a marriage counselor, but what can you do? One thing you can do is help her adjust the direction of her thinking. Right now, she only sees the bad that conflict promises, but she might benefit from seeing three good things that conflict offers a Christian. I use the Peacemaker's Principle pamphlet by Peacemaker Ministries to show that conflict is an opportunity to do the following. Glorify God, help you become more like Christ, and to test your unconditional love and service. If you would like more materials on how to help a friend, stop by our counseling center in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodman. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodman. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Oh, I always love it when you join me on that. We have a very special guest in the line. We just want to launch right into it. We don't talk a lot about immigration reform on Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, but I always thought if we're going to do it, I want to have this guy on because he has a perspective that's probably unique among Iowa Republicans anyway. Alfonso Aguilar, he's the director of Latino Partnership for Conservative Principles with American Principles in Action. He's got an interesting background. He was the former chief of the U.S. Office of Citizenship under President George W. Bush, and before joining the U.S. Department of Homeland Security in 2003, he served in numerous high-level government positions in the Bush administration, as well as the government of Puerto Rico. Alfonso, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hello, how are you? It's a pleasure to be with you, Brian and Shane.
Hey, doing well, doing well. So, why should, just the big picture question here, why should Republicans care about immigration reform? Why not just secure the border?
Well, you know, it's an issue that we have to tackle, and I think the American public expect us, this Congress, to do something about it. Parts of the border are lawless. There's no control, specifically in the sector of the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. We have about 11 million documented immigrants in the country that may be competing unfairly against American workers because they can be paid below minimum wage or prevailing wage. We don't know who they are. So this is a grave crisis that requires us to act. And I agree that what we should do first is secure the border and enforce the law.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once we do that, then we should go ahead and find a way to bring people out of the shadows. They've broken the law clearly, but most law enforcement experts can tell you that they're not going to leave on their own. Self-deportation just doesn't work. It has happened.
Right.
It doesn't happen. And we can't deport them all. So we need to find a way to integrate them into our economy. It's good for the social cohesion of the country. We don't want to have 11 million people living in the margins of society. But most importantly, we have to go to the root cause of the problem, which is the demand our economy has
mm-hmm.
for foreign workers. You know, foreign workers are filling niche jobs that Americans don't want. And by filling those jobs, which are important to the economy, they help create jobs upstream in the labor market for Americans, good-paying jobs. Now, a lot of we hear from different folks saying that immigration is bad, more people in the economy is a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
and you know that's just not true. Because if that's the case, then we should have population control policies, right?
Right. Well.
We shouldn't have kids. But that's not the case. I think in a dynamic in an economy like ours, if you have more people, in this case through immigration, that expands our consumer base, generates more economic activity, mm-hmm. and immigrants complement U.S. workers, and they help increase demand for higher-paying jobs. I'll give you an example. If you have more construction workers, that means an increased demand for U.S. engineers, architects, and better wages for them. So this is how we have to see this. But at the end, these immigrants are coming here not because they want social benefits or entitlements. They're coming here because they want a job. And what we should do is to facilitate their legal entry. They can work here. Mm-hmm. Once they're done working, they can go back to their home country, be with their family. So we promote family reunification in their home country. Then they can reenter legally and then keep going back and forth, incorporate circular migration into the equation. That way they won't have access to welfare. And at the end, I'm not saying we flood the market with foreign labor. I'm saying if an American company cannot find the U.S. workers that they need to grow their business, why should big government tell them that they can't bring the foreign workers that they need? I mean, do we want a highly regulated labor market? I don't think that's a conservative position. Ronald Reagan believed in America as a thriving economy, that we could bring people from any corner of the world and grow our economy and create good jobs for our middle class. So I think immigration reform is important also to ensure that we can create better jobs for working class Americans.
Alfonso,
so that's what we should do it.
Alfonso, I know you guys rolled out a 5-point immigration plan this week, and we can talk about the substance of that in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about the politics of this.
Yeah.
Do you think that your plan is enough to successfully, as conservatives or Republicans, is this plan enough to successfully reach out to the Latino community?
Yeah, I think so. I think what Hispanic voters want to see is an effort, a good faith effort by Republicans to address the issue of the 11 million undocumented immigrants. And what we're saying is, let's secure the border, enforce the law first. And once that happens, and after the president leaves office, then let's start registering people, giving them a path to legal status, no special path to citizenship, and then let's create a market-based guest worker program. But if they see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that they understand that we should secure the border, they understand that we should enforce the law, but the problem is when we only talk about border security, when we only say, oh, we solve this by just securing the border. Well, that's certainly an important part of the plan, the first thing that we should do, but that doesn't solve the problem. There are other challenges that we have to address. And I think that right now it's easy for Democrats to portray the Republican Party as the party of no. And, you know, we unveiled a plan 2 days ago. We had Senator Johnson, a Republican of Wisconsin, and Congressman Labrador, a Republican of Idaho. They're, mm-hmm. they're two Tea Party members, strong conservatives. And they said, you know, we can't continue just saying no. We have to lead, show leadership. But leading on immigration doesn't mean that we're going to do Obama's bidding, that we're going to support Obama's amnesty. We can articulate a conservative plan, and that's what we did.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Alfonso Aguilar of American Principles in Action. Alfonso, it's refreshing to see, because most immigration reform plans we don't generally see an emphasis, especially from the Democrats, an emphasis on you know, securing the border and on following the law. So that's good to see. Looking at the 2016 landscape, who strikes you as a candidate that's probably, I guess, most appealing right now, or one who's really speaking on this issue well in your mind?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think Governor Bush is doing a great job. And, you know, he has said that those who oppose immigration seem to want to follow the economic model, the European economic model of declining populations, that he understands that we need a thriving population with a healthy population growth. And, you know, that's a very good, refreshing argument that actually is consistent with a social conservative perspective of the economy in our country. I think Marco Rubio is also doing a good job. I think Rand Paul has said that the GOP must lead on immigration as well. So I think that you're seeing Governor Perry certainly understands this issue, but I think they all agree that we have to secure the border first. I think the rhetoric we're going to hear on immigration this time around is going to be very different from Mitt Romney's self-deportation, right?
Right.
But again, I think we have to secure the border, enforce the law. I think they're talking about that, but at the end, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the 11 million undocumented immigrants, what to do with them, and then finally address the root cause of the problem, which is the need our economy has for foreign workers.
Alfonso, real quickly, paint with a really broad brush here and tell us your opinion about the Latino and Hispanic communities with regard to whether or not you see them as values voters.
Yeah, well, you know, Ronald Reagan used to say Hispanics are Republican, they just don't know it. and he said that because he, in a state in California with a lot of Hispanics, they're pro-life, the majority of them are pro-life, pro-marriage, they're church-going, and studies show that church-going people that go at least once to church every week are more likely to vote Republican. If you look at polling, the majority of them identify as independent. They're not voting Republican because we haven't done a good job of showing up in the community and engaging them. But, you know, we should be confident about our conservative principles. They're universal principles and have universal appeal. And I tell you, a lot of them, the majority today, are foreign-born or the children of immigrants. They're more in tune with the social conservative culture of their home countries. You know, all of the countries in Latin America, including Argentina, their populations, the vast majority, oppose abortion. Take Argentina, 56% of Argentinians oppose abortion. And that's a more liberal country.
Right. So, is that when you say oppose abortion, you're talking about under any circumstances, or are they throwing exceptions?
Under any circumstance.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, what I take it that you're saying then, Alfonso, is the single issue that is driving a wedge between this voting group and the Republican Party is immigration. And if we could somehow find a way forward on that issue, that we would bring in an awful lot of people into the voting booth for conservative social causes.
You know, absolutely. Latino voters are the Reagan Democrats of today. If we overcome this issue, because it's a gateway issue into the community, we're going to become very competitive and begin getting over 40% and perhaps even get to 50% of the Latino vote. And we'll start winning states again like Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, and expand our possibilities to get to the 270 mark that we need to win back the White House.
Well, speaking,
but it doesn't mean that we have to do Obama's bidding. We need a conservative immigration plan.
Speaking of Latinos and impacting swing states, the Latino vote made a difference in the Colorado Senate race, did it not?
Oh, yes, indeed. And we had a candidate, great, a good conservative, Cory Gardner. I went out there to campaign for him, and good on life. Good on marriage, good on religious liberty. And on immigration, he didn't support Obama's amnesty, but he had a good position on immigration that could be received well by Latino voters. So that's where I'm saying, you know, that we need to find that middle ground on immigration that is consistent with conservative values. And if we do that, look, Kansas, the state of Kansas, the Latino vote went up to 7% in the midterms. Do you know that Governor Brownback won the Latino vote? 48% to 47%. People don't know that, but that's because Governor Brownback has been very good on, obviously, on the social issues.
Mm-hmm.
Latinos are also very entrepreneurial, and they're supportive of school choice, of having more choice, because they want to send their kids to parochial schools. You know, they don't love government as some people think. You know, they come from countries where government is very intrusive and very inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they come here, because of our system of freedom and of opportunity. And if we speak to them and engage them, they're going to respond well.
We just got a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you about the point number three, fully implement an entry-exit registry. And it says utilize a biometric tracking system. That sounds a little Orwellian to me. What would that look like?
Well, you know, right now we actually take down biometric information where people can come to a point of entry. If you go to an airport traveling from abroad, you're going to see immigrants, not U.S. citizens, but immigrants, going through the point of entry, showing their passport and giving their biometric information. However, 40% of the people that are illegal in the country overstay their visa. But we have no way of knowing who's overstaying their visa.
Mm-hmm.
If we monitor who's leaving the country before their visa expire, then we'll know who's overstaying their visa, and we can identify them and remove them from the country. It's effective enforcement. It works.
Okay, so you're talking like retina scans. What kind of biometric data is currently being collected?
Right now it's digital retina, that kind of information.
Okay. Okay. Let's see.
Got less than a minute here.
Yeah. So we'll have to have you back on, because you also address other issues, for instance, like statehood for Puerto Rico, which I think is fascinating. And
you know,
something that,
going back to social values,
yeah,
over 70% of Puerto Ricans are pro-life and pro-marriage.
Yeah, definitely. And is their current governor currently Republican? Or I know one of their governors.
No, the current government is a Democrat. The previous governor was a Republican.
Okay.
Had a faith-based office in his governor's mansion. So
great.
Very conservative. We can make inroads there as well.
All right. Thank you so much. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks, Alfonso. We'll be back
in
a minute.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for caffeinated thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Your friend just had a huge fight with her husband. She is frustrated and can only think about how bad the conflict is and will become. How can you help? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Our first reaction to a friend like this is to listen. This works initially, but in the long run, we tend to only be encouraging negative thinking and gossip. You're not a marriage counselor, but what can you do? One thing you can do is help her adjust the direction of her thinking. Right now, she only sees the bad that conflict promises, but she might benefit from seeing three good things that conflict offers a Christian. I use the Peacemaker's Principle pamphlet by Peacemaker Ministries to show that conflict is an opportunity to do the following: glorify God, help you become more like Christ, and to test your unconditional love and service. If you would like more materials on how to help a friend, stop by our counseling center in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or check out crosswalkcounseling.org. And welcome back. And here we got a few things that were left over from the first segment. One clip we wanted to play, we just didn't have time to. The White House has a different perspective on their ISIS strategy than I think Brian and I do.
Is this Josh Earnest?
You know,
is this press secretary?
I'm not entirely. Okay. It's just a spokesperson.
We'll just play it.
Now, on the overall track record of military operations, U.S. The president's strategy on this, you said we've seen periods of progress and success. Would you say that overall the strategy has been a success?
Well, overall, yes. That doesn't mean that there haven't been areas of setback, as we saw in Ramadi.
I mean, is the exporting terror to Libya, taking over the capital of Iraq's largest province, this is overall a success?
Well, what we've also seen is a coalition of 60 nations, both in the region and around the world, join the United States in this fight. We've seen a new prime minister take office in Iraq and unite that country and deploy a multi-sectarian security force against ISIL that has succeeded in liberating important areas of Diyala and Babel and Nineveh and the Kirkuk provinces. We've seen important Iraqi security force gains in Tikrit and Ramadi. We've also seen strategic areas like Sinjar Mountain and Mosul Dam where Iraqi security forces have emerged victorious. So we have seen a lot of success, but we've also seen significant periods of setback, and that's part of what a military conflict is going to be, particularly one that's going to be a long-term proposition like this one.
Okay, if this... if ISIS strategy, if the Obama's ISIS strategy is a success...
Oh, dear.
I would hate to see what a failure looks like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we saw some gains, in Tikrit and Ramadi. Well, they just took over the capital. They just took over Ramadi.
This was indeed Josh Earnest. And that's Jonathan Carl with ABC News.
And
hats off to him. That guy is actually up there
asking good questions.
Good questions. And do you hear the incredulity in his voice? This is a success?
Right. They bring up the 60 Nation coalition. First of all, I'm not sure. 60 Nation seems awfully high. Let's make one thing clear. It's not the United States leading this, putting it together. This is Egypt and Israel and countries that have skin in the game, seeing the United States' relative failure in showing leadership on this, and they're doing it on their own.
Yeah, and frankly, anybody, let's give them this, anybody involved in this mess right now would be struggling.
Right.
I don't care who the president is, but what really I find shocking is week after week, they're out here feeding the American people this nonsense.
Right.
This is a success. Who are you kidding?
The best thing that the Obama administration could have done, arm the Kurds, and they failed.
Well, the reason for that is, I mean, you know the answer to this. Our biggest problem is not Islamic terrorism. It's not ISIS. What's our biggest problem? The president tells us this. He told us again this week. What is it?
Gosh.
It's climate change.
Oh, climate. That's right. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
Maybe if we give them weapons that have better carbon emissions, then we can arm the Kurds. I don't know. Moving on.
The carbon footprint
yeah.
of guns.
Right. Moving on. Oh, yes. Mike Huckabee made an announcement this week. He said, my focus in the Des Moines Register, he wrote an op-ed, my focus is on the Iowa caucuses, not the straw poll. He's the second candidate to announce that he will not be participating in the straw poll, which, it's kind of surprising on one hand because the straw poll really made his candidacy in 2008.
It did.
He said in this op-ed in part, it's clear that pitting conservative candidates with limited resources against each other in a non-binding expensive summer straw poll battle while allowing billionaire-backed establishment candidates to sit out will only wound and weaken the conservative candidates who best represent conservative and hardworking Iowans. He's got a point, but however, this is helping Iowans determine who they're going to coalesce behind. So I'm not sure not participating in that will help conservatives make a choice. And also too, kudos to the Republican Party of Iowa. They've made the straw poll such, they've made some reforms to it where, you can spend a relatively little amount of money and still participate, at least come to the event and speak.
Well, here's the thing, though, Shane, and don't get me wrong, I'm hoping that things go well, but I think Jeff Kaufman is getting a little nervous, and I wouldn't blame him.
Right.
I mean, you could have a lot of guys before the dust all settles. You could have a lot of candidates say, "I'm not coming."
And honestly, one of the things that he's also looking at, and I would be too. It's going to be very hard for him to duplicate 2007 Iowa straw poll, because really the key to the straw poll isn't so much who comes in first. Even though I think if everybody stopped buying everybody's way up there and you stop doing the pay-to-play, which they've made some good strides at ending that practice, we could actually get a real sense of where Iowans are at, see if they're motivated behind a particular candidate. So you don't have to. Anyway, it's not winning the thing that's the important thing. It's do you do better than expected? Huckabee was really good. He'd have to exceed what he did in 2007. I'm not sure in this particular field he can do that.
Well, it can break you too. I mean, look at Tim Pawlenty in 2009.
Well, yeah, and that's where. And I think some of the changes will help candidates. Yeah, help candidates not spend as much money as they have in years past. But again, it's a candidate who decides how much resources to throw into this. Are you going to buy everybody's ticket? I really wish candidates wouldn't do that. I want to see how many Iowans are willing to go spend money on a ticket and see who they support.
Right.
Because, again, that will indicate to us who, one, has the best ground game, and has the best messaging with Iowa conservatives.
And the straw poll has been skewed because of that practice.
Exactly. And, you know, I'd like to see that particular practice ended. The main thing is just the event itself and having all the candidates there to speak. So I think Governor Huckabee's, you know, he's missing out. But on the other hand, I understand why he's doing it. So I'm not going to. I'm not one saying, oh, he's avoiding the state. Well, it's obviously that's not the case. So,
well, speaking of a limited field, Fox
News, they are going to require in their contenders to place in the top 10 in an average of the five most recent national polls in a run-up to the event. So I'm assuming they're going to use the Real Clear Politics average, narrowing what is expected to be a field of 16 or more by the August 6th event in Cleveland. A cautionary tale here. If Carly Fiorina is not in the top 10 by this point in time, think of the optics.
That would not be good.
We are going to eliminate the only female in the field from the debate. That you want to talk about giving Democrats ammunition.
Oh, boy.
Holy cow. And I know if, you know,
but I tell you what, I think she will be in the top 10.
Fiorina, when she heard this, she's like, well, I'll see you in Cleveland in August. I mean, she fully intends on being in the top 10. Also there was a little filibuster that went on this week with Rand Paul. 11 and a half hours.
But can you call that a filibuster?
Senator Paul, I'm disappointed. Your last one was 13 hours. You're slacking. But no, some of the points he's bringing up is something that I think conservatives really need to consider. The Patriot Act, while at the time when it was passed, had some helpful resources and tools, and I'm not one who says jettison the whole thing, okay? But I think there are some legitimate problems within the Patriot Act that Senator Paul has been very good at bringing to the forefront, and I think we need to pay attention.
We need to discuss issue.
We need to honor the Fourth Amendment. We need to respect the Fifth Amendment. Anyway, we'll be back. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. See you in a bit.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Your friend just had a huge fight with her husband. She is frustrated and can only think about how bad the conflict is and will become. How can you help? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Our first reaction to a friend like this is to listen. This works initially, but in the long run, we tend to only be encouraging negative thinking and gossip. You're not a marriage counselor, but what can you do? One thing you can do is help her adjust the direction of her thinking. Right now, she only sees the bad that conflict promises, but she might benefit from seeing three good things that conflict offers a Christian. I use the Peacemaker's Principle pamphlet by Peacemaker Ministries to show that conflict is an opportunity to do the following. Glorify God, help you become more like Christ, and to test your unconditional love and service. If you would like more materials on how to help a friend, stop by our counseling center in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. And actually, this is going to be a little bit different than our normal segment here, in the fact that this is not necessarily a fun story or, you know, a silly story or stupid story, but it's, you might say, a heartwarming story.
I'm disappointed.
Well, I'm sorry, buddy. Once in a while, I gotta pull this one out of the bag here. Anyway, we are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
Okay, this is from Prattville, Florida. This is courtesy of UPI. An Alabama mother said her 5-year-old son brought a Waffle House to tears when he asked her to buy dinner for a seemingly homeless man, and then he sang a blessing. Ava Falk said she and her son, Josiah Duncan, who's 5 years old, went to the Waffle House in Prattville recently, and the boy's curiosity was piqued by a homeless man who came into the restaurant. There was a man standing inside who was real dirty, and he had his bag, Falk told WSFA-TV. I said, he's homeless. And Josiah said, well, what does that mean? And I said, it means he doesn't have a house. And Falk said Josiah insisted she buy the man's meal. He came in and sat down, and nobody really waited on him, Falk said. He just kind of sat there, and Josiah jumped up and asked him if he needed a menu, because obviously you can't order without one. And the mother said the man was grateful for the offer of a free meal. He said, can I have bacon? And Falk said, I told him, get as much bacon as you want. Falk said Josiah had one more surprise for the diners at Waffle House. He sang a blessing over the man's meal. And the man just cried, and everyone else in Waffle House was crying, Falk said. She said the incident will stand as one of her greatest accomplishments as a parent. You never know who is an angel on earth, she said, and when the opportunity comes at you, you should never walk away from it. Anyway, this was a great story. I was doing research for You Can't Make This Stuff Up, something silly, something odd, and I saw this, and I thought, we got to have this one on.
Yeah, and this is great. And, you have to wonder how many opportunities pass us by when we're not really looking. That could be a blessing to other people. And it's, great that this child is doing this. I'm just thinking of the witness. I wish somebody videoed the blessing he sang. That would have been
priceless.
That would have been great.
This really is one of those deals where you can't make this stuff up. This is the kind of thing that you see in a TV movie.
Right.
But this was real. It really happened. It was totally spontaneous. A little boy, acting on his compassion that he felt in his heart. I don't know. It was a really cool thing to see. When normally you're scrolling through the news and the internet, and there's just all this mayhem and chaos and disgusting stuff.
Well,
and then here's this story.
And just in real life, who goes to a large city and gets inundated with? Anytime I walk in Magnificent Mile in Chicago, because I look like a tourist, I don't look like I belong. Or when I'm in D.C., I don't look like I belong. So therefore, I get hit up all the time, and I just like no. And you come to the point, and people who live in these cities will say, like in D.C., the key to not getting hit up is don't give anybody eye contact. That's what I've heard. And it's just what a horrible way to live.
Yeah.
And obviously you don't necessarily want to give money to every single stranger you meet on the street. However, what are there tangible ways we could be a blessing instead of just constantly overlooking these people? Because, what kind of a message will that send if you just show them Christ's love in a practical way?
Our quote of the day is from John Newton. I am not what I ought to be. I am not what I want to be. I am not what I hope to be in another world. But still, I am not what I once used to be. And by the grace of God, I am what I am.
Amen. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Take care, everybody.